Sports. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, America Tonight. You never know where you're going to end up on this show. I can tell you one thing. We always land safely. Boy, there's been some crazy things that have happened in the air this past Thursday, especially the Delta flight. So check this out. There were people that were headed to Los Angeles. Boy, that always seems to be the thing, too, doesn't it? So they were headed to L.A. from JFK. They took off, and their right engine had a bird strike. So you say, well, you got two engines, right? But what happened was it was so bad, this bird strike. As a precaution, the captain decided, I'm not going to take any chances here, because everybody remembers back in 2009, Captain Sully, who landed the plane in the Hudson after they were smashed with those Canadian geese, and they had nowhere to go but to try to make that emergency landing. So he did it as a precaution, but you actually had the cabinet filled with smoke after the hit. And they test these jet engines to make sure they can take a hit from birds, but sometimes, as in the case of the flight I mentioned, the Miracle in the Hudson, a flock of large birds are too much for engines to handle, because you think of how big the birds are, and none of the engines flying are designed to, or built anyway, to survive an ingestion of an 8 to 15 pound bird or a 25 pound swan. They can't do that. So the JFK, they're constantly trying to figure out what can they do about these bird strikes. There have been 2,586, according to the FAA, because they keep these kind of statistics. That's where we got that from. And they started doing it in 1990. They started noticing there were problems with it. Not all those bird strikes, by the way, were dangerous during flight. Just something happened. Maybe it hit the tail, whatever. But I can only imagine what it was like if you were sitting there on that plane when you realized something was wrong. Grant Cardone talked about what it was like to be part of that, what happened when they realized something was wrong.
A flock of blackbirds hit the right engine, sounded like a Volkswagen Beetle being grinded through the engine. The flight then got disrupted in the air. I thought we were going to go down.
Yeah, that's when someone says, geez, we thought we were going to go down. And that's the thing. What's going through your mind when that happens? Reading about, oh, the pilot felt as a precaution to turn around and, you know, felt confident, that kind of stuff. But how confident do you feel when you're a passenger and you don't know what's happening? You see smoke coming out of the cockpit. Oh, I'm not feeling good. I am tweeting, I'm on the cell phone, whatever I'm doing, because I'm worried that I'm probably not going to make it. Luckily, not the case. Boom, turns around, lands, and then they go from there. They got smashed by a bird, and that's what he felt, the pilot felt like he needed to do that, and that was smart. John Nance is a face that you see a lot on the tube. He's an aviation correspondent. You catch him all over the place. He's a safety guy. He knows pretty much anything you can possibly think of to throw at him when it comes to flights and possible disasters and things that have happened and all that kind of stuff. So he was all over television, and here's a little snippet of what he had to say, starting with, you know, this really became a big thing with the public when you had the Miracle on the Hudson.
What we saw in the Hudson River a couple of years ago, when the engines were literally knocked out by ingesting enough very large birds, geese to be exact, is just a one in a billion situation. That's why it had never happened before that we know of, and it probably will never happen again. But losing an engine occasionally to a very large bird going through one or the other of a jet engine on takeoff is not unheard of. Having to shut the engine down and declare an emergency and come back is also not unheard of.
Yeah, so I guess that's the good news. Remember that if you're flying out of New York and that's the airport that you go. I've flown out of JFK maybe once or twice. I think I've done it twice in my life. Usually if I'm going in that direction, and many of you listening in that area know with the choices of the airports, or anybody who's flown in, you could go to Newark, you can go to LaGuardia, or you can go to JFK, and it seems I'm always at LaGuardia mostly because that's right there in Queens and so close to the city, and to me, JFK is much, much more of a pain to try to navigate it, but lots of flights go in and out of JFK every single day, and they have this problem. They have this problem with the birds, and this is just an example of it. There was another flight that ended up in a worse situation. It was a private pilot who apparently they lost air pressure, and it reminded me of what happened when the Payne Stewart plane, if you remember, went down in South Dakota. He was on a private plane, and they lost the air pressure in the plane, and it's sort of like a ghost plane. No one's flying it because everyone's passed out. And that happened in Florida off the coast of, I guess off of Tampa, I'll call it for a better way to describe it for you. And this was a Cessna. Somebody fell off the radar, and they kept trying to raise them and couldn't do it after they had taken off, in the same situation as Payne Stewart had been in, and the plane went down in the ocean. And people were describing it as circling, not people on land, but those that were tracking it, air traffic controllers, that it was circling is very strange. So Thursday was a day for a couple of weird things in the air. Still, would you believe that airline travel is one of the safest things, especially commercially? Private, it's different because what do people know? Their knowledge of flight and how many hours and all that stuff and their knowledge of the machine that comes into play. But commercially, it's very, very safe. It's just when you hear of things, and in this case, nobody was hurt. It was just a scary moment. It makes you think that, ooh, airline travel. It's surprising. When I spent time in an air traffic control tower once, it's very scary. You don't want to see it, sort of, because it almost looks like the planes are going to run into each other, honestly. Coming up on this hour of America Tonight, we're going to talk about what's happening in Florida with George Zimmerman. Why? Because he's back in court, and it's a simple bond hearing, but you never know what's going to come up. Is there going to be some kind of evidence or something else? His lawyer, Mark O'Mara, is going to bail him out, and how much that's going to be and where they're going to put him. I'm assuming they needed time and said this to make sure he could be someplace where he would be safe. Certainly not in Sanford, Florida, not in that neighborhood. He turned himself in after being charged with second-degree murder. And this goes all the way back to the end of February, and it's become just a national hot button for talking about guns, talking about neighborhood watch, talking about black and white and Hispanic and neighborhoods, all kinds of things. What happens to George Zimmerman? This is just the beginning of his odyssey, and his legal counsel feels like they have the security, I think, concerns addressed. Stay with us.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy-free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraganiX.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM1, the raw probiotic.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms.
I get it.
You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30% while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
BePrepared.com is making deals in April because you need to be prepared now and you need to save. BePrepared.com is the official site of Emergency Essentials, a 24-year leader in emergency preparedness supplies. Everything from long-term food storage to emergency kits, water storage and filtration to alternative light and heat sources. What's on sale? Now through April 30th, save 28% on a freeze-dried garden vegetable combo, which includes peas, corn, beans, cauliflower, celery, and onions. Save 33% on the Katadyn Hiker Micro filter. New instant white rice as low as $8.49 and a 72-hour MRE food and water supply, a $72 value for only $49.99 and much more at BePrepared.com. Call 800-999-1863 to experience exceptional customer service and our low price guarantee. That's 800-999-1863. Hurry, the BePrepared.com April sale ends April 30th. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or BePrepared.com.
Show we talk a lot about numbers. In fact, we even have a segment called We Can Count. How about this? The Ten Commandments. Number one, have you ever seen it? Cecil B. DeMille's version from the 50s. And, you know, it's every year. It's like clockwork. It comes on every year, kind of like The Wizard of Oz. But how many people watch the Ten Commandments? We're talking about 7 million viewers tuned in to watch. So there is certainly something here. One of our old friends, Robert Liparillo, joins us now. He's a screenwriter and, of course, a best-selling author. He's got a new book out, and it's this book is called The 13th Tribe, and it's Bible-based. This can be tricky for people who write. For some reason, a lot of times some of the stuff will be ignored, even though it will be eaten up by the people who see it, who like it, and who want to frankly read things that have a religious bent or talk about religion or, you know, a myriad of other things that we could mention and throw into the pot here. Robert, thanks for popping on ATN again. It's been a long time. Are you doing okay?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
Is it risky when, you know, you start off a certain way and you've got a series of books that are popular, you put them out and then you kind of change a little bit of a direction? Is it risky to go in a Christian or religious, to take that twist? Is it risky at all?
I think it is. I think there's an especially kind of shifting into it from, as you said, not being in that field to suddenly being in that field. And really what I did to kind of mitigate that risk was to write a story that is very much like the stories I've written before, with a lot of action, a lot of gunplay, a lot of high-tech gadgets, things like that. And then kind of had that intro into the story from a Bible story.
So when you sat down, and the book is, and you can fill in some blanks for us here to give people a preview, but it starts on Mount Sinai, right? And it's, you know, the setting is of the Ten Commandments. Am I correct?
Yes. It actually starts in modern times, mm-hmm. and at an archaeological dig on Mount Sinai. And what we find out is that there is a a group of people who became immortal because they worshipped the golden calf during the time of the Ten Commandments. And as punishment, they were given immortality. So it's a little twist on what we normally think of as immortality, as being a gift. They saw it as a curse, that they would never get a chance to go to heaven. And from that point forward, they started killing people, killing sinners, if you will, as vigilantes, hoping that they could earn back God's favor. And then flash forward again to the present, and they kind of crossed paths with a guy named Jagger, who is kind of running the show, running the security part of the archaeological dig on Sinai. And he realizes that this group of immortals is planning to attack a major city, and he has to stop them. So there's the action and the gunplay, and really the biblical side is sort of backstory for what this group of vigilantes is doing.
So when you dig into this and you meld these two things together and you look and you take the Bible and you take stories, you also know that you could come under heavy fire for that because people have certain beliefs of how to interpret certain moments in the Bible, as you and I both know, whether it's Old Testament or New Testament, and specifically you're going old here. But was it tough doing the research and figuring out how to put that together?
There's an element of, I don't really want to say ambiguity, but there's part of it where you can interpret things in the broadest way possible to encompass more people, that they would accept something. At the same time, you want to be challenging and you want to say, hey, how about this? And that's intriguing. You know what really got me to make up my mind to go this direction is I wanted to have this action. I knew I wanted to have the vigilantes. I tend to take topics that I'm interested in and kind of exaggerate them if I want to look at maybe a hero's ability to survive in the wilderness. I might exaggerate that and put him in the worst possible case and make him naked in the worst place in the world. And, you know, can you get out of that? And in this case, I thought, okay, if I were a vigilante, over time, would that kind of twist who I was? I mean, I'm going around killing people. And then I thought, okay, how about over a lot of time? So I really wanted to exaggerate the effects of being a vigilante on the person who is a vigilante. And what convinced me that it was workable, honestly, was Raiders of the Lost Ark. If you think about Raiders, it's a popular story, obviously, a lot of action. It's a Bible story. If you took away the fact that God's power was in the Ark of the Covenant, it really wouldn't be a story.
You're right.
I thought, you know what? If it works for them and it works for that story, it'll work for this story.
There you go. So you weren't taking – remember what happened with Dan Brown and how huge his book, The Da Vinci Code, was, then gets made into a film, then everybody's tearing it apart in different directions.
Yeah.
But your book's better, right?
I think so. You know, what Dan did really is he challenged the whole concept of Immaculate Conception and Jesus and who Jesus was. And I didn't go there. And people have, but they would have to, I think a lot of the people who have are trying to emulate Dan's success by being controversial. And I don't think I could write that unless I really felt it. You know, I couldn't do it from a marketing point of view. I would have to do it from a heart conviction. And that's not where my heart was for this book. So
that makes sense.
I am a little challenging. You know, I do have a flashback to the golden calf. And after doing a lot of research and talking to scholars and both Jewish and Christian, I decided that I kind of came down on the side of, man, that was a terrible thing they did, not just because they were turning their back on a God that just saved them from Sparrow and they use Miracles, they Justine, but they really got pagan about their worship. And there's human sacrifice and just all kinds of nasty stuff. And I mean, it was bad enough that in the Bible it says that God wanted to wipe all of them out, and it was Moses intervening that changed God's mind about that. And the scholars talk about what could be that bad. And so I get into that. So it is a little challenging when we look at the Ten Commandments and we think, oh, okay, you know, they were kind of dancing around, and oh, that's terrible, but not too bad. I depict it as pretty bad.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think people are going to love it, absolutely love it. So you've broken the books open, and we know that 9 of your books have been optioned for motion pictures, which is very cool. And now somebody told me that you're writing a script as well with Andrew Davis. And for people who don't know that name, I immediately knew because I love The Fugitive. He was the director of The Fugitive and The Guardian. How exciting is that? What's that project been like?
That's been a lot of fun. It's been going on for quite a while now, and it's kind of what I know about Andy is that's typical for him to spend time and just really work through a script, and so it's been a while, but I'm really enjoying it. And Andy and I kind of come from different political ideologies, but it's really interesting that we can come together to make a what I think is going to be an exciting movie, which is sort of a political thriller.
Yeah, so I guarantee that one gets made. I can't imagine that wouldn't. And you're just, for people who don't understand, you and I talked about this once before, when books get options, it's very exciting, but you just never know if and when it's going to be made. Is that correct?
Oh, man, I get a lot of people who email me and say, well, what about this movie? I heard about this. And I'm just like, oh, man, yeah, me too. I'm holding my breath. The Dreamhouse Kings, which is my young adult series, I mean, that got on fire for a while. And, I mean, the top screenwriters came in, top producers. They were talking about some really exciting actors. And then it just kind of fizzled out. And I'm like, whoa, what happened with that? And then
love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain, not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. PlantSkid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI listed organic, and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy-to-use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use PlantSkid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's PlantSkydd.com. Ask about our new vole repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. PlantSkid. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed or your money back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock, save you money, and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today. HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system. Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
So you're a maker of something. Woodcrafts, fishing lures, glass designs, jewelry, purses, perfumes, goat's milk soap. Whatever it is, you made it here in America. Now you're eager for people to buy your products right here locally. Instead of buying competing products made on the other side of the world, right? Then you need to check out localmakers.com. Support America. Buy and sell locally at localmakers.com. Doesn't matter if you're a home-based business or a major manufacturer. Localmakers.com offers an easy way to connect with customers within your local community, as well as across the U.S., simply by entering a zip code. And there's no cost to join. So if you're a maker who needs buyers, go to localmakers.com and stock your products on one of our shelves. Localmakers.com, promoting, preserving, and supporting your neighbor's manufacturing businesses.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled L-E-C-I-G.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
Tonight, think about it. If you could go back in history and pluck somebody out and put them in play for the presidential election, who would it be? Doesn't necessarily have to be a politician, by the way. Who you think would just make, flat out, make a good president? Most likely it's somebody that came from the political field, but doesn't have to be. They could be somebody from business or some other line of work, but they just had some great ideas about how to change the course of where we are, where we were going at the time in America that would almost be perfect for today. Sounds confusing. It's not. It's a fun little game. Move this pawn to this side of the board and see what happens. And if only we could do that, if only we could go back in time and pull some people out. Ronald Reagan, everybody's channeling Ronald Reagan, including Obama. They were trying to compare Obama to Ronald Reagan. When I was in Washington last time, they were saying that Obama was Reagan-esque in some ways. And I thought, wow, is that Reagan-esque? Obama? What are they talking about? Are you kidding me? I don't know. How is he Reagan-esque? Does anyone get that? And the story didn't really match the headline. It talked about how he admired certain things that Reagan had done. I was like, that's a ploy. That's a ploy to get votes. Hamid Karzai doesn't care if people like him or not. The trophy for photographs that were released in the Los Angeles Times are wreaking havoc with, I think, and it's going to, the troops that are there now. The group of American paratroopers that posed with the body parts of insurgent suicide bombers, Hamid Karzai took the mic on Friday and said they were disgusting. He used the pictures to push for more Afghan sovereignty, saying the only way to stop a repeat of those awful experiences, painful experiences, was for his forces to take control of their own country. So, naturally, now there's a full investigation after the graphic photos came out that showed clearly men from the 82nd Airborne Division, so maybe some people who thought they weren't going to get in trouble for anything when it comes to the military now are right in the middle of it. And they smiled for the camera. They were posing with corpses. There were 18 pictures taken in all. It happened in 2010, and they were passed on to the L.A. Times by an anonymous soldier. He wanted to push or call attention to a breakdown in leadership and discipline is what he's saying. So it's the latest in a string of things that have now happened this year in Afghanistan. And remember, it started in January. There were the Marines who made a video of themselves peeing on the corpses of the Taliban that they killed in battle. And then you had the Quran that was accidentally, a couple of them that were inadvertently burned, but then there was riots as a result of that, and 30 people were dead, and 6 Americans were basically assassinated as a result, soldiers who were trying to help that government get on its feet. They were mentoring some people. And then last month, of course, a soldier went on a shooting rampage where he's accused of killing 17 civilians. So then Karzai trots out that the Americans need to, you know, toss over the responsibility to Afghan forces. So here's the question. One, really, are they ready? What do we leave with? And, or should we just, are they obsolete? Who cares now at this point? Let's get out of there. Ryan Crocker, the American ambassador, I'm sure his phone was ringing off the hook. He said they were morally repugnant. The Pentagon called the soldiers' conduct inhuman. The White House said their behavior was reprehensible. What say you, America? 855-266-KATE, 855-266-5283. So, will the reaction be muted a little bit more in this case, or will we see that there's a rabid kind of reaction to this? Maybe not as much as the Quran burning. That's what started the riots. I mean, let's hope nothing happens, for goodness sake. I don't want to see any, it's already being pumped out there. There's all kinds of propaganda, but I don't want to see anybody get hurt as a result of this. And it was a year-long deployment. You had 3,500 at the 82nd Airborne. It was the 4th Brigade Combat Team. They're based at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And here's the backstory. They never tell you the other part of the story. Just, how horrible. How could they do it, these 20-year-olds? How could they pose with this, pose with that? I get it. But they didn't tell you that their friends were blown up in their faces. 35 men, including at least 23 to 24, died because of suicide bombers or IEDs. That's what happens. You know, a year deployment, then back again for more. So the whistleblower soldier said in the photographs he felt that he showed that the Taliban folks were killed by their own bombs, and the pictures were distributed among other service people, the buddies, but their buddies had been blown up by IEDs. So they were celebrating because they had that all pent up, I'm sure, in them. Since, imagine, one day, and the closeness of that, you're there, playing cards, occupying your time for the 2 seconds you have off, by the way, because usually you don't have a lot of downtime at all. In fact, it's pretty much 7 days. But you grow close to that unit. You know, that whole thing about never leave a man behind is so true. And in this case, they didn't want to leave anyone behind. They certainly didn't want any of their buddies, comrades, to be killed as a result of that. So that makes sense to all of us. We talked about this a lot on our previous show. The new twist is just, and it's not a surprise, that officially Hamid Karzai really would like to see the trophy photos with the Taliban body parts be the straw that broke the camel's back and I think send everybody out of the country. If right now President Obama called President Karzai and said, you know, here's what's happening. We're seeing this. We're seeing our resources are stretched thin and we're thinking of moving up the timetable. Oh, he'd say when? Tomorrow? Can you roll out the tanks now? And you wait and see. And I hope I'm wrong, but I'm sure the Taliban goes back to control because it's a very illiterate country and they're going to go with the place where they can get the money and get help and whatever they need, meaning in the villages, they're going to go with what they know, I believe. Speaking of the military, I have to segue into this because I happen to see a story in the Marine Corps Times. I have a Marine neighbor who lives just down the street, and I think a lot of people are picking this up. They're talking about it, but the Corps is planning to allow a number of female volunteers to enroll in that school that trains their infantry combat officers. They're going to open the course to women as part of an effort to determine what jobs might be open to females in the future. General Dunford, who's the Marines' assistant commandant, said that they're in the process of looking for the volunteers, and enlisted women also have a chance to take infantry training, but they're not sure what path the people who complete the training would follow. Just that it's open. It's a research plan that they're going to look at after Congress directed the Marines to review their policies, that's why, on assigning women to ground combat elements. So how about it, guys? Do you think women should be on the front lines? If a woman wants to take the infantry course, and the Marines are now being forced because of Congress to look at it, so that's why the vagueness, oh, we don't know what the role is going to be, but they're opening the schools to it. Do you think that this is a good idea? Do you think that we'll ever, actually, it's a fair question, will we ever see this in our lifetime? Will we ever see women serving on the front lines next to guys? Or should we see women in that position? I mean, certainly women have done all kinds of things and have broken lots of glass ceilings. But the question is does this work? Under a 1994 U.S. military policy, women are restricted from formally serving on ground units, in small ground units directly involved in combat. But the last 10 years, there's been women who serve in support positions, military police or medics, and they're certainly in harm's way if they're on those kind of missions. But I think it depends on, I don't know, does it depend on what is the task? Are you a missile launcher crew member? What are you doing? I mean, I think that's already been open to some women. Frontline jobs, you know, infantry units, counterterrorism, sniper teams, will we really see them become gender neutral? Well, you got the physical fitness tests for the combat stuff. You would, I'd assume they're incredibly hard, and that would be definitely what you'd have to look at. So if a number of guys get wounded, you got to be able to, you know, slap some on your back and run with them out of the situation that you're in. And there are several different things I can think of that might be pretty tough for a woman to do, but maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe they could prove that they could do it to the same level of the guys. And if they were up to it, could they be on the front lines? Well, they could, but should they be on the front lines? I don't know. Food for thought. They had to do it. They say they're planning on opening up 14,000 jobs to military women. Meet you on the flip side. We're talking president next. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy
is all natural with no side effects. Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what Pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
You may snicker when you hear this message, but you won't laugh after you experience the best-kept health secret ever, Camel Milk. Camel Milk is loaded with health benefits far superior to other milk. Camel Milk has antibacterial, antiviral, and anti-tumor properties, is rich in B vitamins, and Camel Milk is 3 times higher in vitamin C than cow's milk, and 10 times higher in iron. And Camel Milk contains 52 units of insulin-like proteins per liter, effectively lowering blood sugar levels. Many of our members testified that drinking Camel Milk reversed diabetes and greatly improved autism. Camel Milk is easily digested by those who are lactose and beta casein intolerant and comes fresh or frozen from your trusted local family farm, shipped on dry ice to preserve freshness. Go to CamelMilkForSale.com now and look under products and pricing for the spring special with free bonus pints. That's CamelMilkForSale.com, CamelMilkForSale.com.
Don't answer it!
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed, without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days. And we're the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
So, right now, Barack Obama hears that song everywhere he goes when he comes into rooms and whatnot. It is officially signifies, as all of you know, the entrance of the president and the exit sometimes, too. I've heard that, actually. I think traditionally it's supposed to be just the entrance, but sometimes it's played both ways. At this point, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are the two left standing. It has to just merely become official for Romney, but that's a matter of time, just wrapping up the last primaries and whatnot. But mathematically, he's the guy. Everybody knows that every day a different endorsement comes out, because that's what you do. Once you narrow it down to one, you put away all the hard feelings and jump behind the candidate. Though many people have called this show and have said that they cannot back Mitt Romney, and then others absolutely say that's the guy then. Absolutely, he's the guy. So I was thinking about this the other day, and remember Ross Perot, the billionaire Texan, the founder of the Reform Party. He was the most successful, did you know, this third-party candidate in the late 20th century in American politics, period. And he had some success in the presidential elections of 92 when he ran for president as a nominee of the United We Stand America Party, and again in 96 under the Reform Party that I just mentioned. In the 92 elections, Perot ran against Republican President George Bush and the Democratic contender Bill Clinton. In that race, people forget this, Perot got 19% of the popular vote, the highest percentage of the popular vote as a third-party candidate since former President Teddy Roosevelt won 27% in 1912 on the progressive ticket. That's what he was on then. Perot won 9% of the popular vote in 1996, making him only the third-party presidential candidate in history to get more than 5% of the popular vote in two consecutive elections. How interesting is that? So this is the key. And this is why I was thinking about this question of if you could go back in time and think of some things people have said when they're running for president that made sense a long time ago that we could plug in now, and if only some of those things had been done. The Reform Party platform was maintaining a balanced budget, ensured by passing a balanced budget amendment and changing budgeting practices and paying down the federal debt. Well, that's just a fantasy now because we can't even add what our federal debt is. It's so crazy. Every year dumping $1 trillion on it to the point where we're up over 16. It's crazy. How about campaign finance reform, including strict limits on campaign contributions and the outlawing of the Political Action Committee? Whoa. That would give a lot of people heart attacks. They live on the PACs. That's how we elect people. That's the money to get elected. Imagine if you struck that down. There'd be a lot of people out of work. But what he said is right. I mean, everybody pushes for campaign finance reform, and then what do we get? A little inch. He also liked the enforcement of existing immigration laws and opposition to illegal immigration. So he was big on that. He would harp on the whole thing of the problems with immigration and why we continue to allow it to happen and how it was going to cripple us in the future. And he was right when he looked into his crystal ball. Opposition to free trade agreements like the North American Free Trade Agreement and Central America Free Trade Agreement, and a call for a withdrawal from the World Trade Organization. Woohoo! Term limits on U.S. reps and senators. Okay, so congressmen and senators, you have to be held accountable. What a novel thing from the 90s. How about the direct election of the United States president by the popular vote? Now, there's a big movement of popular vote, popular vote, popular vote. And in one way, I like the concept, but how would it be in application? Such a pathetic turnout when it comes to voting. Would people be more inclined to turn out? I'm going to say no. Federal elections held on weekends. I love that idea because that's part of the excuse. And I know people work on the weekends, but not the majority. So that's always the excuse. They're exhausted, can't get there in the morning, have kids, they're juggling everything, can't do it at night, traffic jams, hassle, get to the precinct, whatever. There's always some excuse. You could do the early balloting, but nobody does that. They do if they're away, and the military does it. But how many people say, I'll just do that. And then I don't have to worry. I don't have an excuse. I have everything in. So the weekend deal, I like. I like it a lot. I like the term limits. Of course, I like the term limits. And I think Perot was ahead of his time. And he had money, so he wasn't beholden to anyone because he had his own stack of cash, if you will. So some things about Perot made a lot of sense. He had ideas that still today we are dragging our heels on, things that could have been implemented that might have worked out all the kinks by now. And made sense. The balanced budget deal, I think, makes complete sense. At some point, you have to hold the people who represent you accountable. And I know what some people would say back to that. Well, of course they're held accountable. That's why we have elections. So if they're not doing a good job, people will just vote them out. But that's not true. Because not enough people vote, number one. So they'll just get back in if it's a familiar name or whatever. I like it. I like the ideas. Term limits. accountability. How about Ty? How about, not Ty, how about raises being linked to that instead of, ooh, what committee can you get on because someone you know is making sure you get on that committee? So while I dig back into the archives and I came up with Ross Perot and what he stood for, thanks to my Cracker Jack research team, then I move forward and I look at Mitt Romney. You've got the Republican leaders who are gathering in Arizona, and they're definitely ready to wrap their arms around Mitt Romney as the candidate. It's the guy. They're getting the pep rally together. They've got a couple of things happening. Romney's going to address the meeting of the state Republican Party chairman at a Friday luncheon. That's going to be a huge event. Then later, he's going to go to Phoenix to raise money for something called the Victory Fund. He established that with the RNC. A minimum donation of $50,000 is requested. Also, Senator John McCain is going to speak at the three-day conference. The passing of the torch probably is what the feeling is in Arizona anyway. And the whole idea is at this point, it's going to be Romney, and this is just a preliminary anointing of him, let's say. Just giving it to him at this point. It's clear that there's no likely scenario under which Romney's not going to be the nominee. He's won it. They know he's won it. So they're meeting and they're doing whatever work they're doing that's official business, but the focus of the meeting is going to be for people to come together behind the nominee and get ready for November, because you got to bury those hard feelings, and divided, they will fall. If they have any shot, the more united the Republican Party is, that's what they need to be, not divided. It's like President Obama and Hillary Clinton. Boy, did they go at it during the campaign. And once it was over, he wanted her to be part of his group. He wanted her to be there knowing that she was an asset. So they're used to this in politics. If they've run for an elected office before, especially now, they know how rough it can be, and that's just the way it is. And then they mend those fences and move on and sometimes end up working back and forth with each other. Send me your thoughts, AmericaTonight.net.